So we have 4 weeks, and we're going to cover the chakras in this period of time. We've presented this class in many different ways. Typically, we've done it as an 8-week class, and when we do it that way, we feel like we can really get into just a little bit of depth. Sometimes we present it on a Saturday morning over 3 hours, a real challenge. But here's really the trick about the chakras, and that is not a trick as much as a truth. I think this is true of all spiritual slash energetic teachings, but no matter how many times you've heard it or how few times you've heard it, you get to learn something new because you get to hear it with new ears depending on where you are, and literally day by day this will change. I don't think, I've probably taught a class on the chakras maybe, I don't know, 10 times now, something like that. Each time I teach it, I realize something that I didn't know before. It's perhaps we could say this about everything we teach in a certain way, but the chakras, and this is what I hope to be able to set up for you and show you tonight, they are not just the essence of the spiritual path, but for people who say that they want to learn and grow spiritually, this is the outline, this is how we do it. This is really, in essence, the purpose of taking on a human body and living a life, life after life after life, which we'll talk a little bit about. But here it is. It's really from the first chakra, which sits at our sacrum, up to the sixth chakra is how far we'll go. I don't know that we'll talk much about the seventh, where we leave energetically when we attain samadhi or complete freedom. We may or may not talk about that. But literally this journey, we could say from the first chakra to the sixth, and I'll explain it a little more. Or sometimes we talk about the spiritual path really being the 6 inches from the medulla oblongata to the point between the eyebrows. They're both really make up the sixth chakra. We call it a negative pole and a positive pole, but I want to be careful with those terms because people have a way of talking about the chakras, sort of the way people do about karma when they don't know. And they want to get a good parking spot, and they'll talk about whether or not they have good parking karma. And they really use it literally instead of the word, like they mean luck. And these terms actually go much deeper. But when we talk about this 6 inches, negative to positive pole of the sixth chakra, and every chakra can be thought of that way, not exactly the way I'll explain it now, but no chakra is good or bad. And that is very important to understand because people talk about it that way. They talk about the first, second, and third chakra even as being bad chakras, particularly if you feel like you're stuck there. And that's just how people think about it because they're earth, they feel a little more bound, a little more physical. But we'll talk a little bit tonight about how there is no such thing as a good or a bad chakra. It's only how we hold it, what our attitude is. It's not the reality of the chakra. It's the direction that we're moving our energy in, which is what really matters. So let me start back a little bit from there, again, to make sure we're all on the same page. I've written 3 words up here, causal, astral, and physical, because everything in life, if we think of things just practically, you could think about how any building is built, how startups happen. You can make it apply any way in your life that makes sense. There's somebody has a thought about something. That's what happens, in essence. They have a thought, they put a lot of energy behind it, and then they manifest something. It can be a job, it can be a graduate degree, it can be building a building, it can be anything. In essence, that's what happens to us spiritually. It's just a little harder to understand. So this causal being, which I wrote up here as a thought, we have to think of as representing. We can use a lot of words for this now. We can use superconsciousness. We can use the word God if we're comfortable with it. We can use the word divine energy. We always say we're a part of all that is. What does that mean when we say all that is? It's very hard for us to get these concepts because we're trying to get them with our minds, which are, of course, as we know, very limiting. And I think most of you in this room have heard this before. So you know we tend to think here in the West, and particularly here in Silicon Valley, we place a lot of value on the mind. People who are smart, people who have a lot of degrees. I'm not against that. I've accumulated a few myself. That's not the problem. The problem is that we actually start living life as if that is our greatest tool, as if that's the best of who we are. And in fact, it's extremely limiting, and it's what keeps us bound to a lot of what we'll call delusion, to the material world, really stuck with our egoic way of looking at things. Again, not because there's anything inherently wrong with the ego, which Yogananda defined. Let me interrupt myself for 1 minute. Because I have an hour tonight to lay out this groundwork, I'm going to put out a lot of energy. There will be a lot of information, I'm sorry. There will be time before class, during the first hours of the subsequent 3 weeks, over dinner. If you have questions, I always stay after class. I want you to know I'm aware that I have to bring a lot here tonight for us to be able to start with the first chakra. Otherwise, we don't even know why we're talking about the chakras. So it's a lot, but I'm just going to talk for 45 minutes, and then you'll have a lot of time again to review, to ask questions, to go over it again and again as we start each class. So I just want to preface everything I'm saying by that. So, no problem. So, there is this super consciousness. Very hard to define what that is, but we have to take. That is the energy source of everything that's made manifest, not just on this earth, but everywhere. And some of you have heard me talk about it very recently in Raja. It's not just material things. It's every thought that we have. It's every idea. It's that which we can see and that which we can't see. Nothing can exist, nothing, that didn't start here. And it started, we say, as a thought. We were an idea in the mind of God. I'd like to just use that word. You substitute, if you need to substitute, something else for it. Again, you can call it super consciousness. I've told people in classes before, think of it as your highest potential, as the best you could imagine yourself being, and then some. Don't get stuck with the word, but I want to keep referring to it as super consciousness or God. When that thought starts taking form, it can only take form because there's energy put behind it. Just like, as I said before, any thought that we have, any idea that we have that we want to manifest in the world, it takes energy. Everything takes energy, meaning however we think of it in everyday life, we have to work at it, we have to think about it, we have to come up with a plan, we have to show up at work every day, sometimes work long hours. That's all energy. That's how we usually think of energy. This is energy more in the form of a vibration. This is a thought that was set into motion. And that motion now, that vibration, is what we call energy. And again, many of you have heard me say, but it's essential here, this is what we're learning these days, even from the scientists. We're learning now that everything is energy. There's no argument about it anymore. We might understand it more or less depending on what our degree is in, depending on whether we're a quantum physicist or not. And even the physicists haven't been able to fully get this idea. They can't. They're much further than they were 20 years ago. This is what the whole science of quantum physics is, really, that says all that we thought was solid material form, we now know is energy vibrating at a particular frequency. And what separates all of the things that we see, what makes us look different from each other, the chair we're sitting on, what makes each of us have different ideas, what makes us have certain likes and dislikes, which we'll talk about in the chakras. But it all has to do with the frequency at which we, our thoughts, whatever it is, that whole list I just said, are vibrating. And it gives us an illusion of matter. It really is what happens, that the mind finds a hard time grappling with that. What does that mean? You are sitting on a chair. How can I tell you that chair is made up of the same exact units of being that you are? And how could that possibly be? Well, because one part's vibrating like this and another one's vibrating. I can't even make my hands do that. But it gives you the illusion of being separate. And so you can sit on the chair. If you were a self-realized master, you could walk right through that chair. You could perform what we call miracles. I was just up at a colony leaders retreat, and I was talking with somebody, and they were talking about what Paramahansa Yogananda used to do when he first came to the country. He would stand up on a stage in front of hundreds, sometimes thousands of people, and he would do things like have his pulses go at different rates, one arm one rate, the other arm another rate. He would stop his pulse in one arm, then he'd stop all of his pulses, and he would have doctors walk up onto the stage and examine him. These things that to us would be, of course, impossible for most of us where we are, but they're not impossible. It's just a question of how evolved, how subtly we can plug into energy, which will all come back to these chakras. He one time stood up on a stage, and he had three burly policemen come up on the stage. I believe it was in Boston. And he had them push against him with all his might. Then without seemingly moving a muscle, he just put all of his energy into his abdomen, and they all flew off the stage. And they just couldn't believe it, three big men. How is that? It's because everything's energy. And when you learn, as we learn, how to begin to control this energy, we start realizing, even in our own little ways, how much more we can not control things, because it's not a question of outward control, but how we change inwardly and how different our energy is. So for us, it might be something like having a terrible relationship with a boss, and then 2 months later, being able to really be around that boss and see that person as a manifestation of divine energy or as a friend. I mean, watching things change in our relationships that we have at home. Suddenly we can perform better. That's the level where most of us are. We're not throwing three burly policemen off of us, but it doesn't matter. It's all the same principle, and this whole spiritual path, as laid out by the chakras, it's all intention, it's all direction, and it's all about where and how we focus our energy that allows us to start climbing up this spiral staircase, is really what it's called, until the point where we are perfectly centered in what's called this astral spine, where all of this energy flows, and we want it to flow more and more and more smoothly. So I'm going to talk about the chakras in a moment. And as that energy flows, we just find ourselves being more calm, more peaceful, more loving. All of these, many of you have heard about the 8 manifestations of divine energy. We become that as we allow energy to flow more smoothly. So what happens? We're all part of this super conscious energy. We are, if you will, one little piece of that, each of us, and everything. When we take a human birth, which where we've come a long way from being a rock, a mineral, a banana slug, a butterfly, you know, maybe last lifetime, I mean, before we took human birth, whenever that was. Really, I mean this, maybe we were dolphins or dogs or something that's more highly evolved. But from the time we have that human birth, there is a moment in time where that egg and sperm come together, and where that piece of the soul that is uniquely us, and this never changes, this is always us, it goes with us life after life after life. It's not like you die, you leave your body, and there's nothing of you left. There's everything of you left. It's exactly the opposite of what we've been taught. Everything of you is left. It's just in a different form. It's freed from the body again. So that piece of this superconscious entity that dives in when the sperm and ovum unite, that magnetic draw, the magnetism set up in the astral spine that leaves this body with us, that returns with us. So again, it's uniquely us. That will not change. Is drawn magnetically to exactly the right body, the right family, the right situations, every moment of every life to be able to continue on this journey. There is absolutely nothing that can happen outside of this, the magnetism that's created in these chakras, which means wheels, which sit in the very core of our being, in what is called an astral spine. You can't see it. You can't take an x-ray of it. You can't do a spinal tap on it. You can't get to it in that way. But it's as real, more real, actually, than our physical bodies. And energies residing in there, again, in flowing through what we call chakras. Chakras means wheels, really. That's what it means. Wheels as in spinning, as in vortices of energy. And we'll go through the chakras, as I said, week by week. In just about 15 minutes, I'll start talking about the first chakra. But the chakras are spinning, and people often say their chakras are blocked, or we have to unfold them like a lotus flower. These are the images we have. Really, they're all ways to allow us to imagine what it means to just let energy flow and to open in an upward direction. When that piece of the soul joins with the ovum and the sperm, and that the Sanskrit name for that is jiva. I'd never heard of that, but Asha talks about it a lot, and it's perfect. There's no real English equivalent for that word. But again, it's that part of the soul that is us now, and it will continue being us as long as we need to keep coming back to work out our karma, which I'll also talk about in a moment. As long as we need to keep taking birth in human form, that jiva is going to keep finding, because it's just drawn there. So it's not like anybody punished you by having you come into the parents that you had, or by giving you an awful older brother, or jobs that go bad, or marriages, whatever it is, illnesses. There's nobody else who's treating you badly. And it's not like we're consciously drawing these things to ourselves, like, I think I'll suffer now. It's not like that. But from a magnetic point of view, very much like if you placed a magnet here and a magnet here, they would be drawn to each other. Or metal here and a magnet here. Excuse me, they would be drawn to each other. And it's not that this magnet has it in for this safety pin and it's going to get a hold of it and never let it go. It's its nature. That's what happens. It draws metal. And in the very same way, we draw to ourselves experiences that are uniquely there for us, as unique as a fingerprint or a snowflake. They're uniquely there for us so that we can keep moving forward spiritually. Now, we forget that, and we forget that every single situation in our life is there for the potential of our soul, for our soul really to attain enlightenment. And all of us, we do this. We wind up blaming people. We get very self-righteous about it. We're sure people are out to get us. We think we just made a mistake and we'll never make it again. We're pretty sure we were fooled. No, I'm telling you, this person did not have these qualities when I married them. If I had seen this, I would have never married them. I've heard it so many times. You know, they made the job look like it was something else. It just goes on and on. But if instead of saying, which we say a little cutely all the time, but not cute, why is this happening to me? If we say in life, why is this happening to me? Really, why? How can my soul benefit from it? Because it could not have happened any other way. Because we were a thought, we were made manifest by energy, and all energy is magnetic. It's the nature of it. You can't escape it. And no matter how much you want to blame somebody else for certain things that happen in your life, no matter how much you swear, this has happened to me so many times in my life, it's embarrassing. For years when I was in my 20s, I was in psychotherapy. Good psychotherapy. It was good for me. I'm not sorry I did it. And I would be absolutely certain that I was on top of some quality, bad habit, unconscious act, drawing certain people to me who were not good for me. I mean, I could stand here for hours and tell you the things I used to do. And then I would be sure that I was healed from that. And a year later, I'd find myself in a situation and I'd say, how could this be? I was so certain I had worked completely through that quality. But I was working through it maybe psychologically and emotionally. Again, I'm not at all against it. I think many, many people come onto a spiritual path hoping to be able to avoid doing that work with their ego, with their conscious mind, with their feelings. And they think they'll just come and start meditating and they won't have to work through all that. But it doesn't work that way. You really actually, it's interesting, in order to transcend the ego, which is our goal, you actually have to have a pretty strong, clear, what we'll call a strong or clear ego. Because here's another interesting thing about our soul and magnetism and the way this works. Navashan, may I move over this way just a little bit? And that is, it doesn't matter what you wish was happening. It doesn't matter how you'd like to be. It doesn't matter how much you're going to, it does matter how much you affirm things because affirmations are important. But in the moment, if you're really enraged with somebody and you're seeing everything that's wrong with them, but you just pretend that you're acting lovingly or you pretend you're being generous, but it's because you want a lot of positive feedback because in some other way you're greedy, that's the karma that you're creating. That's the imprint that you're making on this energetic spine that's going to follow you life after life after life. So let me come back to where I was so that even that sentence I just said can make more sense. I want to remember to get back there, so I'm planting it in my mind right now. The sperm and the ovum come together. The soul connects there. And immediately, in that instant, we have a soul identified with the body. Once the soul identifies with the body, what happens to most of us is we forget that it's a soul, that it's got an infinitely expansive nature, that we're unlimited beings, that we are pure love, that we're peace, that we're joy. We forget in an instant, and we think we're this body. So we're identified with the body. We make the mistake of thinking we are the body. We are our thoughts. We are our mind. And we develop what Swami Kriyananda very sweetly called a big bundle of self-definitions. And we define ourselves through the mind. I'm this, I'm not that. I'm pretty in this way, but I'm not in that way. Gee, I wish this were a little different on me. No, I've never been really smart. all of our likes and dislikes, they are endless, endless. You just think about how many ways you identify yourself. And all of that brings us into this tiny little being of being this body, being limited to this body, being limited to this mind. And as I said, we carry around all of our likes and dislikes. We'll really fight hard to hold on to them. They really matter to us because we think that says, this is who I am, and we're proud of it. And we get self-righteous about it. We do all of that. As soon as that soul is identified with the body, and very interestingly, literally, the first place in the body that's formed when the sperm and the ovum come together is the medulla. And it's at that moment, as I said, Yogananda defined ego as the soul identified with the body. So the minute that happens, that union happens, we have an ego. And that ego is about me. I, me, mine. That's what ego does. It's not all horrible because it is the soul. It's just, as I said, it forgets. And as soon as that happens, the whole blueprint that we've come in with, an energetic blueprint that we have to make us, just like you need a blueprint to make anything. I said to you before that as soon as the soul leaves this body, that jiva just keeps going. We have a lot of adorable names for that, depending on what religion you're from. People call it heaven, hell. They call it all different things. But what they're talking about is, where is that soul, our spirit, magnetized to go when it leaves this body? How have we lived until then? So, and it's not like everybody goes to the same place. It's not what happens. It has a lot to do with the vibration, the magnetic vibration of that soul. So it leaves, but as it comes in, it comes back in with what we call a spiritual blueprint. And that blueprint of who we've become until now on this spiritual journey. I just want you to see the chakras here. So I'll just put this here. This journey that we'll talk about, the energy goes from being here, expansive, infinite, squeezes into this little body, and it brings the energy all the way down. So we have a first chakra, which is called the root chakra, which is about how grounded we are. And then it literally, it doesn't form the chakras. It is the chakras from which we are formed. This is another thing that's backwards to how we hold it, but it's essential. We think we are and we create energy. That's how we think. Oh, I'm going to go out there and do a great job. I'm going to build this building. We think of ourselves as the source of energy. You know, years ago when they started being able to do Curlian photography, which is really a fascinating science, they began to be able to show the energy before the physical thing, whatever it was formed. So Connie Hernandez, who has taught this class with me many times, has a beautiful slide where you have a leaf, you have a beautiful picture of a leaf, you cut a piece of the leaf off, and then they take a picture. And although there's only half of a leaf there physically, the entire energetic outline of the leaf is still there. The energy comes first. The energy comes first. And it's put into vibration. It's vibrating, and it manifests as something physical. Does that make sense to everybody? Does anybody want to ask any questions before I keep talking here so far? Okay. Feel free to. Because, of course, we don't know when we're up here speaking if that means I'm doing such a great job and it's perfectly clear or you have no idea what in the world I'm talking about. Thank you. Okay, so this blueprint comes in from the moment of conception. And these chakras, these little vortices of energy, are laid out in this astral spine. Now, very much the perfect image for them is a stream. We think of our astral spine as a stream with, I mean, it doesn't have to be water, but it's hard for people to imagine energy. But you can imagine it as light, as heat for that matter, or certainly as fluid, whatever you want. If it was all just flowing smoothly, if there was no obstruction in us, nothing making us be more contracted, more downward pulling, more insistent on staying connected to all of who we want to believe we are, which is really what it's about, that we're so enamored with ourselves, which is really what happens. It's a very interesting thing to watch how hard people will fight to hold on to even qualities about themselves that are causing them harm. It's just remarkable. And I think everybody in this room knows I'm a physician, and these stories are quite incredible for me because I, for years now, have had this practice called transformational medicine. So you have to think of who would come to somebody who has a practice where their card says transformational medicine. Assuming they understand the word, it means that they want to change, however they hold that or think of that. But you've all, many of you at least, have heard me tell stories. But it's important to how strongly people will hold on to being exactly who they are. Not week after week, because I don't usually see people every week, but month after month. I can give people assignments to do. It can be something as wonderful as go up on a mountain and paint. And they'll keep coming back, did you go and paint? No. Why? Well, I want you to tell me what's going to make me better. No, I told you to go and paint. That would make you better. The reason it would make them better is because it starts energy moving, assuming they're an artist. It might be somebody who plays music. Some of you have heard me tell this story of, I can't think of his name right now. Darn it, somebody here will. The surgeon who was at Yale probably 30 or 40 years ago. Anyway, he was one of the first, he was a Yale surgeon, very well respected, and he started getting that there was something going on other than what he had been trained to believe was happening in the human body. And he had a man who was sent to him, somebody who I wound up meeting several times, Bernie Siegel was his name, the surgeon, not the patient, Bernie Siegel was his name. He was one of the first people writing books about this kind of thing. Not exactly from a spiritual perspective, certainly not about the chakras, but about, he began to realize that there was much more and there was something about energy and shutting ourselves down that caused disease. That's how he would think of it. This man was sent to him who had a cancer that had metastasized, that had spread. A couple surgeons didn't think it was operable, but they said, go see Bernie. If anybody can do it, Bernie can do it. So they sent him to Bernie, and Bernie talked to him. And he said to the man, you know, I can't operate on your tumor. It's in too many places, but I'd love for you to keep coming to see me. And what came out of that after a few visits was that the man, he was a Jewish man who had come over on a boat, landed at Ellis Island, which many Jewish immigrants did, who were fleeing, as you know, different parts of Europe. And he was, in Europe, a child protege with a violin. He had a Stradivarius that in those days cost, in the mid-1900s, cost $50,000. I mean, it would be worth millions and millions of dollars. And he came over when he was 5. But he had been performing and playing in Europe. That didn't help at us. This is better. For many years. And Bernie said to him, where's the violin? And the man said, when we arrived at Ellis Island and we moved down to the Lower East Side of New York, which is what happened to a lot of the Jewish people, it became a real stronghold for a lot of the Jewish immigrants. They opened a lot of very specific types of businesses. My father said, we're in America now. We're going to follow the American dream. That violin is worthless. And he took it from him. And this little boy, who was literally a child protege and had been performing, never saw his violin again. And Bernie said to him, I want you to go get the violin. And this man, who is now in his 50s, I saw this man, as I said several times, said, that's ridiculous, I haven't touched it. Bernie said, it doesn't matter, go and get it. And he brought the violin, and week after week, Bernie would take 15 minutes of their time, and the man would just play the violin. And the cancer disappeared, completely disappeared. It's incredible. Now, I'm not saying everybody should pick up a musical instrument when they have cancer. Nor am I saying that all cancers disappear. That is not the first, was not the first time, and it's not the last time I've seen widely metastatic tumors disappear. It's not the last time I've seen what we would all call absolute miracles. But really, what does it mean is what's much more important for us, and that is when energy gets blocked, stuck, when we don't allow it to flow, when we are brought into this world with a calling, with something we need to do, and we, after all, we all have the calling of becoming our true spiritual selves. That's what we're doing here. We don't know that. We don't live with that consciousness every day. Some of us are trying hard to remember. All of us are. You wouldn't be here tonight if you weren't drawn to this for some reason. But we're all at different places with it. As I said, there's not two of us that are alike at all. This is why it's very hard to do spiritual counseling in some ways. There are spiritual truths that can hold true, but to look at somebody and try and feel what is their next step or what would cause them harm, like taking his violin away from him, you know? And then energy just gets stuck. He literally could not move, and he got cancer. I mean, it makes perfect sense. So these little vortices of energy are just like little twigs, little outlets on a stream. There's a little outlet over here, and rocks get caught in there, twigs get caught in there, and the water gets in there, and it just starts twirling around. And until you either put a huge force behind it, if you opened a dam upstream, it would take those rocks and twigs and just pull them right back into the mainstream, and whatever was stuck there could find its way to the ocean. So you either have to go in and remove the obstruction in some ways, I'm not talking about surgery now, or you have to bring a lot of energy to it and put that energy in the right direction. Because if we try to fix every single thing that was in our way, well, I mean, that's what we've been doing. That's exactly what we've been doing. That's why Yogananda said, it takes 10 million lives before you even get to a human incarnation. And then he was very kind to us. He didn't tell us how many lives we have to live this right now before we can really be free. But of course, here's what's really important about the chakras and thinking about them and starting to work with them, is that every one of us has the potential to be completely free in this very lifetime. Every one of us has the potential. How many of us will get there? Well, I don't know. But no matter what, if we make a lot of spiritual progress, even when we come back, that, remember what I said, nothing happens when we die. Nothing changes. We get to come back honing on to that progress. It's like we made it to 10th grade, and we went on a 3-year vacation with our families. We left town. When we come back, we don't have to start in kindergarten. That's not what happens. We get to pick up where we were. So every single thing that we do in this life, everything that points us in the right direction, everything moves us down our spiritual path, or in this case, up our spiritual path. It moves us from a place of being stuck and rigid and fearful. And we'll go through each of the chakras, because every chakra has all of that in it. We can either, it's got qualities that move us towards greater, more expansive awareness, or it has qualities that are limiting, that are contracting. everyone. This is not a linear process. But what is the truth is that to be free, all of the chakras, all of the energy needs to be flowing, to be totally free. Now, that's a hard goal for most of us because we don't know what that means. It was not that many years ago in this life. I just remembered this, and I think I said it a month or two ago in a Sunday service, as embarrassing as it is. But it's true, because I've been looking consciously for my spiritual path since I came in this time. It was just first around Judaism, but it doesn't matter. By the time I was 20 years old, I was traveling every single year looking for a spiritual path. Well, that was some degree of awareness. But I was in my late 30s or even 40 when I was thinking to myself, what do people have against coming back? Life is so much fun. I was having such a great time in life. I just couldn't get it. Yeah, I wanted to be sort of spiritually in tune, and I wanted to be a good person, and I loved being loving and generous and all those things, but I just had no notion. That was only 28 short years ago. So, I mean, I just couldn't get it. I was listening to all these teachers, literally, all over the world. I'm thinking, why are they saying, don't come back? Like, what else would we do? You know, that's sort of where I was. And so I get it. I'm saying it out loud to say to everybody, I'm in a different place now. I was just up at Ananda Village. I just drove back a half hour before class started. We had a colony leaders retreat, and one of the people from Sacramento were telling us that one of the people in their community had a heart attack while he was in the emergency room and a cardiac arrest. And so I said, wow, what a great place to have that happen. I didn't think much more of it. I happen to have known the man well, which is why I know him. I mean, he's alive. And so I knew him and I still know him. Which is why they were mentioning it. But anyway, later we had this break, and I guess we were in the kitchen making lunch. And I didn't realize it, but about six people came up to me and said, what's the difference between a heart attack and a cardiac arrest? Now, these are all of the colony leaders from around the world of Ananda. These are people who have been with Ananda since its beginning. And they're so, really, every one of them, they're so clever and so funny. You know most of them. They're just a great group of people, or many of you do. But there's about six or eight of them there. And I said, well, heart attack is, you know, when you lose the blood supply to part of your heart muscle, and that part of your heart muscle dies. Cardiac arrest is when your heart totally stops. And so one of the guys looked at me and he said, well, which is better? And Dharmaraj from India, who was right there, says, he just stepped right in, he said, I think it depends on what your goals are. And it was so funny, it was absolutely true. Are you wed to staying in this body? If you are, you'd rather have a heart attack. If you're ready to leave, you want a cardiac arrest. It was very funny, actually. So, I mean, it's perfect for what we're talking about here. It's very cute. Just like that. He's very funny and very fast, Dharmaraj. Okay. I'm going to stop right where we are. I will keep coming back to this each week and expounding on it more and more, but I want to talk just a little bit about the first chakra. Bhajana will talk more about it after dinner, but I just want to lay a little bit of the groundwork. She has wonderful handouts for you to really bring what will happen in the second half of this class is to bring a very practical understanding to these chakras and what can we do? What areas do we work on? I don't know if you talk about diseases at all, but that are related to each chakra. But anyway, you'll see they're wonderful, and you get to learn meditation techniques and mudras and other things for each chakra. So we lay down this blueprint that says this is who you are, and this is who you're going to be, other than the fact that as human beings, we've been given free will, and we can actually make progress. So we're not always stuck with all of exactly the same things as we were four lifetimes ago. Yogananda said, anything you see anybody do in life, anything, you've either done it or you need to do it. Somebody said to him, you mean like murder and stealing things? He said, yes, everything. Because that's the evolution of the once we take human form. Now, hopefully, just because whatever drew all of us to be in this room talking about the chakras, I would say this is a pretty high level of spiritual evolution. You know, the Gita says, out of 1,000 people, one will seek me. This is Krishna speaking. Out of 1,000, one will seek me. Out of 1,000 who seek me, one will find me, meaning attain enlightenment in this life. But I always feel this when I'm up here giving. I think it all the time. I don't have to be giving a class or a Sunday service. I know it to be true. Everybody in this room is that one in 1,000. We wouldn't be here otherwise. We are the people who really, whether we even know it or not, whether you think you're just here for intellectual curiosity, there's a lot of other things you could be doing tonight. But you're listening to somebody talk about something you can't see, feel, know, prove. Not the way we think of it. Something drew us here. We're sitting in this beautiful church, in this extraordinary energy. So we are pretty highly evolved already. And I think that's important. We don't lose hope. It's not that we're stuck with exactly what it is. And it's a very interesting mix because I forget who said this, whether it was Swami Kriyananda or Master, was saying every single thing you do, everything you do, is predetermined. Everything. And somebody said, you mean like even the tie that I put on in the morning? And he said, absolutely. Yes. But that means we came in with that. That doesn't mean that we can't begin to work on opening, aligning this energy, drawing it into the very center of the astral spine called the Sushumna, and allowing it to flow, clearing all of the debris, all of the little rocks and the twigs, everything that's obstructing the flow, that we begin to work on it. We do it by affirmation so that we quit having negative thoughts. Because remember, this is an energy pattern. I've begun to refer to it like memory foam. You know memory foam? It's so out there now in pillows and beds. You touch it and it leaves an impression. Everything leaves an impression here. Everything. If we think good thoughts, if we do good deeds, if we quit being so stubborn, if somebody criticizes us and we don't get defensive, if we are harboring negative thoughts, even if we don't act on them, all of that is affecting this energy. So the more we can do to constantly be drawing our energy, I started to say before, we can't cure ourselves one by one by one by one. There's trillions of things that are holding us down. We have to find a way to just draw energy here because it's magnetic. It will start pulling. Instead of opening the dam upstream, we're focusing everything here and drawing all of our energy up. So literally, the more time we spend bringing our energy back to the point between the eyebrows, bringing our energy back, that's all we ever really need to do. And our life would change. Just keep saying, no, Shanti, put your attention here at the third eye. Come back to the center of Christ consciousness. If you said it 1,000 times a day, if you just keep saying it, no matter what, boy, that person's annoying me. Don't stay there. Come here. Why is this person driving so slowly? Come here. I don't like the way I look. Come back here. Back and back and back. Constantly, your life changes. Doesn't matter what's happening out there. The situations don't matter. Our attitudes towards them and our behavior towards them matters. Okay, the first chakra, known as the root chakra, because it is where and how we're rooted. Every chakra, by the way, has a lot of things associated with it. And I want to tell you that Savitri's chakra workbooks, which I just remembered are in the trunk of my car, but I'm going to bring them in. They're really quite extraordinary. Because people are always interested in this. What planet, what foods, the color, what stones, what crystals, you know, what's related to which chakra. It all matters. It definitely matters. If you're somebody who's having trouble expressing yourself and you can start wearing the right color for the fifth chakra, things just start changing. Just literally that. So it all matters, and it's all in that book. So whatever we don't get to, you'll be able to pick up a book if you want. But this is, so every chakra is related to an element, and these I will talk about as we go. And the element for this first or sacral chakra is earth. And it's because we want to be grounded, because we want to lay down roots. We want to develop a firmness of intention. This is the chakra that has to do with loyalty, with security, with how solid we feel. And all those things, so you can see, this is the first chakra. It's been bad-mouthed a lot. But where would we be if we don't feel secure? Where would we be if we don't feel how solid we are? Where would we be if we had no loyalty to anything? You can see, we can't exist that way. So it's not the quality of the chakra that makes it good or bad. It's what direction are we pointing to with all of that? What are we going to choose to be loyal to in this life? Are we going to be loyal to feeling or secure with? So are we going to feel secure if we think we just have to make more money, buy more things? And, you know, when I say it here, it always sounds like such a gross exaggeration. But look around you, if not within. We have all lived there, and most of the people we live around live that way. I remember years and years ago, this woman has subsequently died. She was a very good friend of mine and came from old money, old Connecticut money, if that means anything to all of you. And then her money made money. She was extremely wealthy. And she lived in one of these phenomenal homes just outside of Washington, D.C., but she loved Ananda. And she came out here to go to the village with me about 5 times. And one time, she said to me, let me see your house. I want to see your house. I live in the Ananda community a few miles from here. Well, many of you have seen some of those apartments in places. They are small. They were built in the 50s. Many of them at that point had not even been upgraded the way they are now. And as a physical place, presence, they were not exactly beautiful. But those of us who lived there wouldn't have lived anywhere else for anything. But she walked in and she was speechless. So of course, she had visited me I lived in a 10,000 square foot home in Maryland for many years that I rented. It was a Maryland historic landmark home. It literally sat on 100 acres of land. That's how she met me. Now she walks into my apartment in Ananda Village, Ananda Community. And that night, we were at dinner with her son, who had a job in Berkeley, which is why she was out that time. And she was talking to him, and she was saying, well, honey, Shanti lives... where she lives, let me see if I can describe it. And then she said to him, you couldn't imagine it. I mean, she just stopped even trying to explain how we lived. I mean, it's not that far away from us that people need, and it's not bad to have a beautiful home. I mean, I've lived in a lot of beautiful homes, but I don't think it's a bad thing. But when you think that's where your security comes from, when you're going to be loyal to all the things you need to be loyal to hold on to that home, because you're sure without that home you lose your identity. And this just goes on and on. It goes on to your partner, to your children, to everything. So the whole thing about this first chakra is that all of these qualities are perfect qualities. If we say, I know who I am, I know where I am, I know where I want to go. I want to move in the direction of being more uplifted, more expansive, all the things that we'll say as we go up the chakras, more loving, more compassionate. My loyalty and is invested in finding my way on this path. That's what I'm loyal to. Doesn't matter how many times we fall off, doesn't matter how far we have to go. Everything starts changing in the first chakra when we when we define our loyalty in that way, when we get clear about what's really going to bring us security, because everybody in this room knows there's not one other thing in all of life that's a guarantee. Nothing is a guarantee. Not your beautiful home, not your partner, not that your children will live as long as you do. Nothing. Not even your own health. Only guarantee, I'm loyal to this divine search that I'm on. I know where I stand. I know the direction I'm going in. I know that as long as I do that, I will continue to feel and be secure. That's what I know. That's the only thing you can hold on to. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but it's simply the truth. And we live with this illusion. And every one of us in this room knows it. I can't tell you for sure what would happen if my husband were, if I go home tonight and find him not in his body. I don't know. I practice all the time. Not that he's out of his body, but for emergencies like that. What are you going to do if somebody has a cardiac arrest in church on a Sunday morning, Shanti? What are you going to do if you're home and there's an earthquake? What are you going to do if you walk in the house and find Barry gone? On and on. I just say to myself, keep coming back to center. I mean, I'm not morbid about it. I'm saying it all in one sentence now. But we have to. We have to keep saying no. What do I have that's really mine that I can always have with me? It's inside of me. Nobody can ever touch that. Okay, I'm going to stop.
I'm used to India, as you can see. So now let's first start sitting up straight with a straight spine. Very comfortable, not leaning against the chair. Because if not, as you see, the nice channel which goes upward gets slightly blocked. Close a moment your eyes. You can bring your hands facing upward. And maybe use a mudra so you can tune in to the energy flow. Bring the little finger, ring finger together with your thumb. And then index finger and middle finger straight. In this way. This is called Prana Mudra. It's a mudra which helps us to become more aware of the energy flow within us. Okay? Now close your eyes. Bring your gaze upward at a point between the eyebrows. Focus there for a moment. With deep, long inhaling, like through the spiritual eye, and with a long exhaling, slowly go down along the spine, to the base of the spine. Stay for a moment at the base of the spine, tending and relaxing your anus muscles. Feel a moment, inner stability, inner strength, a feeling of peace. Now with the inhaling, bring it up along the spine, going again upward to the point between the eyebrows. Hold the breath there for a moment and feel a deep expansion, vastness, unity, oneness. And with the exhaling, go back to the center of the first chakra at the base of the spine. Continue on with the breath to connect, to be on the earth, grounded, strong, centered, at the same time uplifted, one with everything. Slowly open up your eyes again. Now, while we I talk only a little bit, and then I prefer to go to experiential and practical parts, try to stay in that flow in the spine. Try to feel your breath flowing with every inhaling upward. Hold it for a while, and then with every exhaling, try to go deeper inside, in your inner center. Now let's go back to the first chakra. First chakra is the foundation. When we are here on earth, the foundation for our spiritual life. What happens when we are not grounded? What do you think what happens if you are not stable? It makes it very difficult, isn't it? To be grounded means also to be concentrated. Can we concentrate when we are not grounded? When we are out of balance or not centered? And what is important to reach the goal, like when you think of the Bhagavad Gita, Patanjali, when we talk about concentration, the importance of focus begins in the first chakra. Only when we are really grounded, stable, centered in our spine, there we can feel then and we can focus, concentrate on the higher goal. If we are out there, wishy-washy, not much can happen. First we have to go to that inner center, to that inner strength. And we see a little bit the quality of the first chakra, the tendencies of the first chakra is a little bit to enjoying the material wealth, to gain a lot of money, to do a lot of studying so we can earn more money, isn't it? If we don't do two or three things in the university, how we will make a lot of money? So the focus is the tendency of the center, outward tendency, is material. How I can gain more, how I can get a beautiful, nice Ferrari, or maybe a Mercedes, so everybody can see how good I am. That is a lot, the outward flowing energy. But are we happy when we have that? We get a new Ferrari, the next day a neighbor comes and makes a scratch in it, and we are not happy anymore. And that happens with everything that is material. To be grounded, to be centered, means to be centered inside our spine, inside in that what we truly are. And then the qualities of the first chakra can express. The qualities are more control over the mind. That's also a quality of the first chakra. Isn't that a great job? I think we will be busy with that. Controlling the mind. As the masters say, it's easier to control the world as to control the mind. But that is the quality of the first chakra. That's the quality when we are centered. Other qualities, courage, loyalty. Loyal to your higher self above all. To be loyal to your higher self, not to society, not to imposed situations, but be loyal to your soul. That is the true loyalty to your higher being inside. Then when we think of perseverance, you think perseverance is important? Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound very convincing. Perseverance is extremely important. That's the quality of the first chakra. that you can see how much we need it, how much we need the first chakra to be centered. Because also to reach the goal, any kind of goal, we have to be persevering. To reach again our divine heritage, we have to be persevering, constant, focused, and centered. Other patience, that's not one of my qualities. Do we need patience with others, patience with ourselves, patience with our sometimes little ego who comes in the way, but I don't want it yet, or not in this way. Patience is extremely important, and also that is a quality of the first chakra. To develop patience, you can practice it a little bit every day. Patient with your colleagues, patient if there's a traffic jam. I love now traffic jams. That gives you a moment to go inside, to have that inner connection, a great opportunity to pray for others, to send blessings out to all the others in the cars. Isn't that a great time? Instead of getting upset, which doesn't help you much, with patience you say, thank you, God. I have a moment of break where I can focus on the divine. I can send out vibrations of kindness, of prayers to all around me. And one of the main, when we talk about divine manifestation or the eight qualities, the first chakra is peace, peacefulness. How is our life when we are peaceful? Isn't it nicer to be peaceful? Life becomes fuller. Because when you are not peaceful, when you are not centered, you will not see. Because you are all over the place, but you are not aware of the very moment in front of you. So we want to get there, and the great masters of yoga, and I have to say thank you, India, who has held on to this tradition very, very strongly. They have brought us techniques. They have brought us teachings, affirmations, to gain again control over our outward flowing energy of the first chakra, to bring it inside and bring it up. When you are centered, when you are strong in yourself, like Swamiji, also when material things break away, that nobody can take away your peace and your joy. Like Ananda Village, at the beginning, there was a year everything got burned except one house. Were they all upset? Destroyed, ungrounded because of that. They lost everything in one day. All material things nicely burned, roasted. No, they found more inner strength through the meditation, through the different practices and techniques. They had that inner strength to say, okay, that's a great opportunity to build it better. To make something nice, maybe God said, I don't like you how you live right now. You can do better. And so he took away everything and one can build up. But it becomes a joy when you are centered. So also when your house crumbles, you can have another one. God never will let you outside on the road when you have faith and centeredness and peacefulness. We are all the children of the divine. Okay? So now when we talk about practices, how can we balance our first chakra? What do you think? Go to parties? No? What kind of activity can help to balance the first chakra, also outer activity. That is inner activity, that's the highest. But what can you cannot sit 24 hours per day, isn't it? That, but what can you do? What happens when you walk in nature? And maybe also you concentrate on the breath. What happens to you? What do you feel? Peaceful? Can you feel a sense of oneness, of unity? Can you feel your feet touching the ground, the earth? How do you feel in that moment? Uplifted? You feel good, isn't it? And many solutions come when you go walking. To all different problems, when you sit in the office with all your computers and 10 coffees, you will not find solutions. But you go out, you move, you walk with your feet. Legs are straightly connected with our first chakra. They are the expression, outer expression for our first chakra. Hiking, sports, going a little bit of running, but gentle running, not simply like that, but moving in a harmonious way, being aware of the breath, being aware of the movement, that will balance your chakra, your first chakra. You will feel so much more centered and concentrated. Also those who are very much vata, which is like who have a lot of air, when you go walking in silence outside in nature, it grounds you. Other activities. What about on your workplace? How can you balance your first chakra at your workplace? Can you balance your first chakra when you work on competition to be always better than the other? No. Can you balance your first chakra when you always get upset with everybody? No. What about harmony? Learning to cooperate. Seeing a bigger picture. Working together. That is a quality of the first chakra. Seeing a bigger picture. Creating harmony, peacefulness. When one creates that in the workplace, at home, you become a peacemaker in the world. It's not with going out with a thingy and say, we want peace, and they're so upset when they talk. No, you bring peace when you bring harmony in your environment. Peacefulness in your environment, in your thoughts, in your workplace. That is harmonizing the first chakra. Other qualities. The first chakra is the greatest support. It's like the roots of the tree for your spiritual life. Can a tree stand unshaken in a storm when the roots are little? What happens with the big tall trees? Nicely looking when a strong wind comes, they fall. And the same thing is for us. When we don't have that groundedness and stability, our root system strong, we will not stand unshaken. As Master said, Yoganandaji said, to stand unshaken in the midst of crashing worlds. He didn't speak only about the world, earth. He spoke about worlds. That means many, many ones, okay? So find that inner center, and we will start to do a few practices. You have then here a handout with affirmations, which you can practice. That's like a little homework for at home. So here you get also homework when you come. It's cool, but beautiful homework. You can practice to observing your breath, how much you can be centered in all different situations, and joyful and peaceful. And practice, choose one of the affirmations, I've chosen for the different chakras. For the first chakra, security. It's a beautiful affirmation for security. Perseverance, peace of mind, practicality, and alertness. You have the affirmation then on your handout, what you get today. So choose one where you feel maybe I need it a little bit more and try to practice it throughout the week till the next time we meet us, okay? And then we can share what was your experience, what happened in that week, harmonizing your first chakra and then always uplift it. The first chakra has a straight connection with one of the higher. It's called the three lower chakras and then the three higher. The three lower chakras, one can call them lower chakras because they are more an outward expression of harmony of the divine qualities. The three upper chakras are more an inward expression of our connection with the divine. But each of the lower chakras is connected straightly with one of the higher chakras of the spiritual. Because we are complete beings. We are spiritual beings, souls, which are manifested through energy and at the end manifested in the physical forms of physical bodies. So we need all of that to express. So the first chakra is directly connected with the heart. So when we get too greedy or too stuck, what helps to immediately uplift a stuck first chakra energy? What do you think? What are the qualities of the heart, spiritual heart? What about compassion? What about generosity? Kindness? Giving a smile? Also in a store, in a shop, or somebody shouts at you, and you bless him. The energy from the first chakra flows upward to its counterpart, which is the heart. And how will you feel? How do you feel when you feel compassion? How is your inner experience? When you feel kindness, do you feel, oh, I feel so bad, I'm kind, I feel compassion? No? How do you feel? Uplifted. Exactly. Because the energy from the lower center, from the center, is uplifted to the heart. And when the first chakra works straightly together with the fourth chakra, with the heart center, we will go much deeper into that, then it's an uplifted manifestation on the physical plane. And heart and the practicality work together. Okay? That's extremely important. So try to focus a little bit during this week. But now practical parts to do, a part of certain activities, how to apply it in your life. How can we gain control over our mind? What tool do we have to really control our mind? The breath, exactly. Not hiding here in the back. Come in front. Come to us. Exactly. How is the breath when you are upset? Goes fast. And where is it located? Here. Shallow. It's all here. How is your breath when you're really upset? It's like a dragon who is spitting fire. Exactly. It's very hot than the air. We will try it in a moment. And when you're very sad, how is your breath? So all the different emotions, human emotions, they're very much connected, interconnected with our breath. So when we learn to control our breath, what happens then to our mind? Will we be able to control a little bit more our mind? Will we be able to change our experience through the breath? Yes. And all the yogis have shown us the way for that. All the practices, what one does, are always interconnected with the breath. Okay? It's our tool. Now we talk a little bit, and that's what I want now to start, but before we practice a few pranayamas, and you will experience inside you the change, only with a few moments of practicing a controlled pranayama or controlled breathing exercise. It's part of pranayama. Pranayama is so much more, but the breath is one of the most important ones. Okay? Pranayama, what is the meaning of pranayama? It's a part of it, but prana, what is the meaning of prana? Life force. That's that flow within us. It's like electricity. When you have a power station, that's like the power station, there is the electricity. And then it flows through the currents to the light bulb. What happens with the light bulb if there is no electricity flowing to the light bulb? There's no light. There's no life. Okay? So learning to work with the breath is part of learning to control our life force. It's not only through the breath, but it's the greatest tool for it, but is learning then to become much, much more aware of our thoughts, of our attitudes, of our way of reacting to the environment and to different situations. When we learn first to control our breath, slowly we learn to control also our mind. And that is one of the greatest tools of the first chakra, is that strength to learn to control. And when you have control over the mind, which is like a wild horse, extremely wild horse, not only one, but five, when you learn to control that, there's peace. And like in all scriptures it said, also in the Bible, be still and know that I am God. When you're agitated, when the life forces are going all over the place, will you perceive or experience that what you truly are? Yes? I would say no. Okay? So, but when we are still, and we are in that state of peace, inner peace, there we can experience that incredible beauty which resides in each one of us. That incredible power and strength and joy. So now let's begin. First we do a few little stretching, let's stand up, because when the life force is a little bit sleepy, not much will happen. Let's put the legs a little bit aside. We're doing standing, a few stretching exercises. Inhale up. Long and deep inhaling. Then turn to the left as far as you can. Exhale, center. Inhale, turn to the right. Exhale to the center. Now, is here anybody who has heart problems? Nobody heart problems? High blood pressure? Everybody. Exhale. Come down. Lengthen and stretch. Try to touch with your hands. Inhale, come up. And exhale. Doesn't it feel already better? have a few little things, okay? Now let's begin with sitting down once more, then we do a few postures to center. But before, I want to show you one pranayama, which is par excellence for balancing, which is called Nadi Shodhanam, or also in many parts of India, Anuloma Viloma. It's the same breath. It's the balancing breath. For example, we have, here you see only one channel. We have three channels in our spine. We have Ida on the left, Pingala on the right, and in our center, inner center, is the Sushumna. It's the place where we want to go, is that inner channel, okay? Not left, not right, but inner channel. But at the beginning, it's not so easy. So very often, through different experiences, traveling, moving a lot, being very active mentally, can bring that inner balance out of balance. So there's then very often it happens that one channel, for example, either, is stronger than the other, or Pingala is stronger than the other. The effect of that is that we feel imbalanced, irritable, very impatient, easily getting upset, spaced out. All these terms, maybe you know a little bit these terms, or did you never experience this kind of situations? Then you're great. Then you're already nearly there. So that all happens through different activities throughout the day and our responses to them. But already traveling on its own creates a little bit of that imbalance, because we have always to carry three bodies. There's the astral, causal, physical body. And with traveling, that gets a little bit shaken up. Okay? Nadi Shodhanam is a pranayam which balances the two flows, Ida and Pingala. It harmonizes these two flows. That brings us back into our center. So it's one of the primary pranayama to harmonize and balance again the first chakra, to give us again that stability, that inner strength, that inner centeredness which we need. Okay? Can we practice pranayama when we sit like this? What happens to the energy flow? There's a lot of blocks, sorry, I have to sit up straight. So when we sit also nicely leaning back in the chair, what happens? Is there a lot of energy flow? No. So now try when any time, not only when we practice prana, but try to sit up straight with a straight spine. And breathe deeply, okay? Now when we practice Nadi Shodhanam, I will guide you in that alternated breath. I will show it a moment to you for those who don't know it yet. But before we begin, it's good to breathe with the diaphragm, okay? The correct breath, which in the society, especially in sit environment, many have lost, and they breathe exactly the contrary. The correct breath is with inhaling, you expand and expand and expand, a little bit like a lady in the 7th month with inhaling. And with exhaling, you go back in, okay? And the breath is here, it's not up here, it's here. Try a moment before we do the other one. Close a moment your eyes, bring your hands to the abdomen. Now relax your shoulders. I see a few tense shoulders. Relax. Now with inhaling, slowly inhale, expanding your abdomen like a balloon. A little bit more. A little bit more. hold, and now exhale. And bring the abdomen back in. Again, inhale slowly. Expand your abdomen more, a little bit more. Exhale and go back in. And a third time. Inhale. Long and deep inhaling. Expand your abdomen a little bit more. You can do more. Exhale. Slowly go back in. Relax your hands. And now let the breath flow freely. Already only with this, how do you feel? Who feels a little bit calmer? Is it a nice feeling that you can have the whole day and you breathe correctly? Okay? Now, Nadi Shodhanam. We use our right hand for this pranayama, so we guide the flow of the breath in the nostrils. We create a mudra, which creates a certain circuit of energy flow. The index finger and middle finger we bring to the palm of the thumb, like this. It becomes like a little, what do you call that? Pincer. Thank you. You bring it up like this. Already when you simply concentrate with closed eyes, you feel a change of energy flow when you hold it like this, only with the right hand, okay? Very good. Except the ring finger has to be up. Yes, perfect. Now with the thumb, first I show you, so you don't have to do it yet, but you hold in the meantime the mudra like this, so your hand gets used to it. With the thumb, we close the right nostril, and with the ring finger, the left nostril. That, like the movement is this, and when I say close, we pinch the nose together, okay? So one breath of Nadi Shodhanam, we begin on the left side, remember always breathing with the diaphragm, then we close, we hold the breath, and then we exhale on the right side. We inhale on the right side, close, hold the breath, exhale on the left. That is one Nadi Shodhanam. Okay? Now let's begin. Before we do it, observe a moment your mind. That's sometimes scary. How is the state of your mind? Is your mind awake, alert, or it's a little bit sleepy, already a long day? Well, there are many thoughts running around. You're already going shopping in your mind. Observe it. Now let's begin. Sit straight with your right hand. With the thumb, close your right nostril. Now inhale. Remember with the diaphragm. Inhale. Close, hold the breath. Exhale right. Inhale right. Close, hold the breath. Exhale left. Now when you inhale, feel a movement or concentrate on going from the base upward. Inhale. Hold your breath, focus in the spiritual eye. Exhale on the right. Energy is going downward or inward. Inhale right. Close, hold the breath. Exhale left. Inhale left, upward movement, Hold your breath, focus on the spiritual line between the eyebrows. Exhale right. Now go more within with exhaling. Inhale right. Upward movement. Close, hold the breath. Exhale left. Relax your hands. Now concentrate a moment inside. How is your mind? We do another breath. Focus at the base of the spine. Feel your feet on the ground. Feel that you're sitting. Now with inhaling, before we inhale, first tense, like bringing drawing upward from the anus muscle at the base of the spine. Draw up, hold the tension. Now inhale deep up to the spiritual line. Long, deep inhaling. Hold your breath at the spiritual line while you're still holding the tension at the base. And with exhaling, slowly relax. And let go. Once more. Tense at the anus muscle like drawing upward. Inhale up to the spiritual eye while holding the tension at the base of the spine. And slowly exhale, going downward and relaxing. And now feel. How is your state of mind? Observe a moment the breath. Observe a moment your mind. How do you feel inside you? Slowly open up your eyes again. How do you feel now? More centered. What does that mean for you? Inside. Is that a beautiful feeling? That is a harmonized first chakra, center, and strength. Other, calm, very beautiful. Other experiences, relaxed, exactly, tense. That has a meaning. I can shortly talk about it, but was. For everybody here, could you feel a change doing a simple pranayama with a simple concentration? What happens when you do that every day? Exactly. Next week, you let us know, because that is a little bit the homework for this week, a part of an affirmation. Try to practice at least for 2-3 minutes this pranayama, okay? Nadi Shodhanam. Also simply diaphragmatic breathing. Focus inside. Observe your breath. And next week you tell us what it was. And you do it in the morning before you go to work. If you can perceive a change in your ability, also like finding solution, everything. And usually one is much, much more, how you call it, you can do much, much more things in a shorter time when you're focused. And then you have more free time for dedicating to quality time, to meditation, reading an inspiring book, when the time is used well, okay? So now we do also another, a few little yoga postures going deeper with working with the spine and feeling the groundedness, the centeredness. And let's see what happens. How long do we still have? We still have a little bit. Yeah. Now let's stand up again. Here it's better we take off the shoes, because if not, we feel. Yeah, we do very simple things, because it's mainly the experience of groundedness. Now let's have our feet hip width apart. Remember, the hips are here. They are not also, if it's bigger, it's here, this side. Now inhale, bring your shoulders up. Exhale, roll your shoulders back down. Lengthen, neck a little bit in, the chin a little bit in. Hold your eyes open, and now gently move forward without falling. Can you fall? Can you feel centered? Where is your center now? And then gently move back without falling backward. Can you feel that? And now come in the center. How does that feel now? It's different. And there's always something. Also, when we move forward, try it once more. Go forward. There's something off-center, isn't it? Something which pulls you back. Now go back and back in the center. And now try to close a moment your eyes. Gaze upward, but feel your feet firmly on the ground, stable. Feel them holding you up. Breathe deeply and feel a quality of openness, receptivity, to be open, to listen to the guidance of your soul, to the inner guidance of your soul, of your higher being inside you, to intuition. I stand ready to obey your least command. Feel that your mind, your body is ready to follow your soul. Open up your eyes again. Now tense and relax at the base of the spine, mentally chanting Om, Om, Om. Only mentally. It's like a sound which you perceive in the first center, tensing and relaxing. Same time, feel your feet firmly on the ground. While you tense and relax, feel that energy. Mentally chanting Om, Om. Feel the vibration of it, of inner centeredness, inner stability. From that, bring your weight onto your left leg. I'm mirroring you. Big toe, little toe, heel, push into the ground. Lengthen up straight. And the right leg next to it. Bring your hands in Anjali Mudra. Long, deep inhaling, slowly move upward. Exhale and relax your shoulders. Continue on to tense and relax at the base of the spine, chanting mentally Om. Now, with a long, deep inhaling, bring all the energy upward, down to spiritual life. hold your breath in the spiritual line, and then exhale through the spiritual line. Mentally affirming, I am calm, I am poised. I am calm, I am poised. Now inhale, lengthen up, stretch, exhale. Surround yourself with calmness. Come back into that asana. Relaxing the left leg. Close again a moment your eyes. Feel inside you. Try to feel now the difference between your left and right foot on the floor, on the ground. Feel that inner energy. Observe a moment, a subtle flow in your spine. Every inhaling and upward movement, every exhaling you go deeper within. Bring your weight onto your right leg. Big toe, little toe, heel, push into the floor, lengthen up. Then turn your left leg to the side. Hands in Anjali Mudra. Inhale, upward, opening up, exhale, and relax your shoulders. Breathe deeply with your diaphragm, while focused at the base of the spine. Mentally chanting on. Feel the vibration of Om inside. Now with a long, deep inhaling from the base of the spine, inhale up through the spiritual line. Hold the breath. Exhale through the spiritual line. Mentally affirming, I am calm. I am poised. Now inhale up. Stretch and lengthen your body. Exhale very slowly. Surround yourself with calmness and with poise. Come back in the center and close your eyes a moment. What do you feel? Now try to feel both your feet firmly on the ground. How is your breath? How is your state of mind? Be aware. Now slowly come onto the ground, on your knees. If you can, if not, you can do that also from the chair. It depends on your knees, then it's better doing it on your chair. And you can bring your toes together. Maybe also for you, because after a little while, the knees will not be happy. When you are on the chair, important, you bring under the chair your feet together. We want to touch with the right big toe, the left big toe. So it creates a circle, a circuit, a closure. Right hand in your left hand. Shoulders up. Now close again your eyes and breathe deeply. Feel like a mountain, a stable, firm mountain, like a rock in the ocean. Waves, wind cannot move the mountain. Stable and firm. Stay with your breath. Mentally affirming, In stillness, I touch my inner strength. In stillness, I touch my inner strength. Try to feel it. Experience it with every breath. The stillness of your body, stillness of your mind. Then slowly open up your eyes again. But try to stay with your breath. Come in a comfortable sitting position. Who wants to sit on a chair? Who wants to sit on the floor? Whatever feels more comfortable. We want to do a short interiorization, a visualization. Sit up straight. You can bring your hands again in Prana Mudra, which stimulates and activates more the flow of life force inside. Eyes are closed and upward. Now again, concentrate on the first chakra. At the base of the spine. Try to feel it, the quality of it, centeredness, peacefulness, perseverance, alertness. With a long inhaling, tensing your anus muscle while you inhale up, now to the heart. Hold the breath in the center of your heart. And now, with love, exhale through the point between the eyebrows. Like offering yourself in an ocean of light. The next inhaling, go back to the base of the spine. Again, with inhaling, go upward to the center of the heart. Hold your breath at the center of the heart. Concentrate. Exhale with love, like a surrender. Letting go. Then let the breath flow freely in your spine. Concentrate and feel your body like a rock, like a mountain. Firm. Still, stable, with a constant flow of energy inside, in the center. Energy which flows upward to the point, to the peak of the mountain. And with every exhaling goes deeper within, in the center. Mentally affirming. I live in the fortress of God's inner presence. Nothing and no one can break through these walls and harmony. I live in the fortress of God's inner presence. Nothing and no one can break through these walls and harmony. Feel that inner safety, inner heaven, every breath in your center. And then affirming from pools of inner silence, I sip the sparkling waters of thy peace. Bring all your concentration upward into the spiritual life. Visualize light, pulsating light, which comes closer and closer, filling your whole being. The light of peace and stillness. Feel it in every fiber of your being. For 2 minutes, simply be there. Enjoy. Enjoy that inner peace. Visualize in your spiritual life planet Earth, surrounded by light, the brilliant light of peace and of harmony. Let's pray that the divine light may elevate human consciousness, their true divine nature in all nations. From your spiritual life, focusing, we chant 3 times on for the world, for the peace and harmony. The vibration of peace from your whole being emanate throughout the world, throughout all beings. Oh. slowly you can open up your eyes again. It was a little experience of a peaceful first chakra. If you practice every day a little bit, also only one thing of that we did throughout this week, you will feel a change and you will feel a difference. Okay? Thank you all.